Demand Judge Shaw Injury Law 732-888-888-888. Demand Judge. Demand Justice. Demand Judd. The injury accident professionals. First class service. Judd gets it done. Maximum compensation's our goal. See JudgeShawInjuryLaw.com. Demand Judge Shaw Injury Law 732-888-888. Demand Judd.
Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. And now, here's your host, Greg Giamborisi.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. I'm Greg Giamborisi from the Jersey Shore Blue Claws, Hook, Line, and Splitter, presented by Judge Shaw Injury Law. We understand the toll injuries take on families, and we're here to help. For a free consultation, call 1-866-909-6894 or visit JudgeShawInjuryLaw.com. That's Judd with two Ds, ShawInjuryLaw.com. Fun episode today. We wrap up the Phillies minor league season. Of course, the Phillies themselves are in the NLCS right now, game one later today. As we record this, you might be listening to it later, but we taped everything here the day of game one of the National League Championship Series, and we had a chance to do a four-person roundtable with the broadcasters, some around the system, Josh Sperber from the Clearwater Threshers, Jake Starr from the Reading Fightin' Phils, and Sam Jelinek from the Lehigh Valley Iron Pig. So we talk about the system, the season, everybody gives their hitter of the year, pitcher of the year, breakout prospect for 2023, and then a couple of guys to watch heading into 2024. So a good coverage around the system, and I think you guys are going to really like it. We thank those three guys for joining me, Greg here from the Blue Claws, for a few minutes. So I don't want to keep you guys waiting. It's a long one, but it's worth it. Let's get right to it. Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Happy to be joined by the voices of the Phillies minor league affiliates, Josh Sperber from the Clearwater Threshers, Jake Starr from the Reading Fightin' Phils, and Sam Jelinek from the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. Guys, thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Great.
Ready for the NLCS? Doing great, man.
Yeah, we're taping this about 6 hours before game one of the NLCS. So if Orion Kirkering does anything crazy tonight, we don't mention it, that would be why. So before we get into the nitty gritty, kind of want to just go around and give some general thoughts about your respective teams from the year, and we'll just take it up from Clearwater. So Josh, you can go ahead. You had a hell of a year.
Yeah, I mean, second game of the season, Threshers got their first win on a no hitter. After that, it was just a whole lot of domination, unfortunately, until the last game of the season, taking it all the way to the final game of the championship. Definitely a fun ride. Obviously wish that the shirt that I got on said more than first half champions, but you know, still my first year with the Threshers and the Phillies organization was a whole lot of fun. Got to see a lot of talented guys, and I'm excited to do it all again in about 100 something days.
Yeah, the Blue Claw season did not get off to as clean a start. They actually walked 13 batters on opening day and lost in 11 innings. But after that, started 2-8 and then really picked it up from there. They were about eight back in the first half and cut it to a half game, fell a little short. Then they were eight back in the second half. The third week of July, went on a huge run, made the playoffs on the last day. Had some really crazy games. Felix Reyes hit a walk-off home run in the last home game. Blue Claws churned through about 60 players. Many of the guys that began the year in Clearwater finished the year here. Many of the guys that began the year here finished in Reading or Lehigh Valley, and we'll get into that. But it was an exciting year and obviously fell a couple of wins shy where they wanted to get, but it was a fun season. Jake?
Yeah, I mean, on paper, more of a down year. I mean, very up and down season overall. And they've gone 28-40 in the first half. Bit of an improvement in the second half. They were 31-37, finished 59-77 overall, which is about on par for where they were in 22 as well. Got to see a lot of cool things. I mean, pitching wise, that was an area of growth for the team after having one of the lower ranked ERA, so higher ERAs in the Eastern League in the first half. That really turned a corner in the second half, and our offense really from April through July-ish, really up until Johan Rojas got called up to Philly, was one of the best, if not the best, offenses in the Eastern League. So that was cool to see on a nightly basis, hitting a lot of home runs, finished, I believe, third in the Eastern League in home runs hit this year. And offensively, it kind of tapered off late, but during the year it was, you know, really good and really exciting to watch. And of course, you throw the record out the window. There were still a lot of things to be happy about this year. Had a couple of players make major league debuts, Rojas in July, Kirkering did his in September. And of course, both are now pivotal pieces to the Phillies postseason roster. I mean, we saw what Johan Rojas did in game four against the Braves. And then some other things too. You wanted to see Mick Abel take a step forward, and it really felt like the last, you know, 6 weeks of the season, he did that. He was just more sharp physically. He told me that mentally he's been more sharp too. So to see him take a step forward is, I think, a really important development for the organization, just because, you know, the uncertainty surrounding Painter, who may or may not, you know, be on a field by the end of next year, we'll have to see. So having Abel continue to take a step forward, I think, is really good. And then some other guys, Carlos De La Cruz, Ethan Wilson, both turned in solid years as well. And then a couple of guys kind of, I don't want to say came out of nowhere, but you know, you look at an Oliver Dunn, who had a great year, who was a minor league Rule 5 draft pick, who's tearing it up in the Arizona Fall League. One more name I'll kind of mention before tossing it over to Sam is a guy that he's seen a lot this year, Matthew Kroon, someone who, you know, had a really bad knee injury just two games into 2022. And he felt really good entering the 22 season, thought that was kind of going to be the career year, but he goes through that rehab process. And really, finally, he breaks through, hit 319 with us, earned a call up to AAA. I know he missed some time with the Iron Pigs, but he still tore it up there. So it was cool to see, you know, your Mick Abels of the world, your Johan Rojas and Kirkering do their thing. But a guy like Matthew Kroon, who, you know, has had a slower development in his professional career, got injured, and then finally really broke through this year.
Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, so, I mean, on the whole, Pigs finished 14 games above 500, had a pretty strong playoff push towards the end of the season, ended up falling a couple games short to Durham, which, I mean, when you're doing a split-season format that was announced 2 days before the season started amongst a 20-team division, it gets pretty complicated to make the playoffs, so we were happy just being in contention. But, you know, drilling down a little bit more individualistically, player-wise, I thought the Phillies did a great job of stocking the Iron Pigs roster with a lot of guys. Ended up actually having some big impacts for the Phillies, and that signings, guys kind of on the older end of things and making sure the Phillies had a lot of depth. And I think that that's what everybody around here was most happiest with, was the every time somebody got called up to the majors, they had a positive impact in the Phillies. Then when they came back down, they continued to rake down here. So, I mean, you know, Jake Cave had an insane 2 month stretch with us, goes back up, is able to contribute to the Phillies. Derek Hall, I mean, he really struggled with the thumb injury even when he came back, but then he comes back down to Lehigh Valley, is great. And I think, you know, honestly, we don't know what's going to happen with Rhys Hoskins, albeit this postseason or next year. I don't hate the idea of Derek Hall proving what he did last year down here and having a big impact for the Phillies. And obviously, Weston Wilson was kind of the story of the year for us, just a random minor league free agent signing who just – had a fantastic career year, parlayed that into, you know, making his major league debut, being able to go up, be on the postseason roster. And then on the pitching, I think a great testament to how good the Phillies bullpen was. But for the guys who did have to go up and down a lot, the Junior Martes, Luis Ortiz, Bilotti, and then eventually Orion Kirkering, you know, even Jeff Hoffman at the beginning of the year when we had him, you know, they did a really good job making sure every guy, every arm in the bullpen for the Pigs was ready to go up when they had their number called, was able to contribute, and then just kind of came back down here, kept on doing their thing.
So we'll get in a little more specifics as we go back around. So this first time through here, we're going to have you guys give your hitter of the year or hitters. Maybe if you, I'm sure, you know, each of us had probably 60 plus players on the roster. So a little tough to go just one, but we'll get, say hitter or hitter, maybe two of the year for your club this year. So Josh, take it away.
Well, I think for me, it's a pretty easy answer. Justin Crawford began the year with the Threshers. He had a little bit of a struggle when he first came to Clearwater in his rookie season, fresh out of the draft, as many younger players do. But, I mean, from the beginning, you knew that he was going to be a really, really special talent. Left the league leading in batting average by like huge margin. I think that the next he finished the Threshers season at 344. I think the next highest person in the league among qualifiers was barely over 300. So, I mean, that just is a testament to how dominant he was from the one or two spot usually in the lineup. He finished with 62 RBIs. That was third in the league when he left and ended up eighth in the league by the time the season ended. And he left a month before the regular season ended. So he was really great. I probably call him my hitter of the year, but obviously there are plenty of guys in contentions. Caleb Ricketts had an absolutely torrid beginning of the season with us that led to him joining you, Greg, in Jersey Shore. Unfortunately, his injury started after that, but he was fantastic for the Threshers. Gabriel Rincones Jr., another guy who got called up, was great. And then a lot of unsung heroes for Clearwater. William Bergoglio showed some nice contact skills for an 18-year-old coming in late in the season. You had Felix Reyes, who you mentioned, Greg, who was a force in the middle of the Threshers lineup all year long. Otto Kemp, who was just great wherever we put him, really consistent at getting on base. Amarion Boyd as well. I mean, with the success of Clearwater's offense this year, really anyone, I think, could be eligible for that hitter of the year award. But I think Crawford was just that much better than everyone else in the Florida State League, really, that I'd have to give it to him.
Before we bounce around, this would be a good time, Josh, to have you talk about Pressureville, what that was. And you guys had it obviously, you know, all year, but it was especially strong there at the first half of the season. Tell us about that.
Yeah. I mean, Pressureville. I mean, any way you want to slice it, just, it was really the team mentality, they're just loving playing in front of the hands. Threshers were the only 40-win home team in the Florida State League this year, finished with one of the best records at home and in general in all of minor league baseball. And I think just calling it Threshersville was just one way of the many that these guys bonded together and really just showed how much they love playing in the Phillies organization with the Clearwater Threshers. I mean, it really promoted a big team unity atmosphere that not just went through the players, but also went with the coaching staff as well, because in my 6+ years, going on 7 now, of being in minor league baseball, I don't think I've ever seen a team as close as the Threshers were for the majority of the season. And, you know, I think Threshersville was just a nice, fun way to really show that off and show how much the guys really love playing in front of the great fans at BayCare Ballpark.
Here at the Blue Claws, I thought a couple of guys really had good seasons. Marcus Lee Sang got off to a really good start. He was the Phillies minor league player of the month in May, hit over 350 and got a well-deserved promotion to AA Reading, had 8 homers, had 20 stolen bases and almost an 800 OPS. And, you know, for those that don't know, this ballpark is in Lakewood here is one of the tougher hitters ballparks in all of minor league baseball. So I thought he made some really good strides. He was only 21. And then Leandro Pineda was one of the few guys that was here the whole season. He got off to a really rough start. He hit 190 in April, 220 in May, 190 in June. But then he hit 279 in July, 342 in August, and did not turn 21 until the 4th of June. So, you know, it's kind of exactly what you want to see. A guy that comes on strong at the end of the year, was young for the level, and just kind of started to click in for him as the season went along. If you ever got a chance to watch him, he has the most beautiful left-handed swing that you'll ever see. And I know the Phillies really, really like him. You might not see his name on a lot of the prospect lists, but I think he's definitely one to keep an eye on, and he'll be in Reading, I'm sure, at the beginning of next year. And Gabriel Rincones Jr. had a really solid campaign when he got up here. I think the thing that stands out with him is that, you know, he drives the ball the other way. He hit, I think, 7 home runs in this park of his 10, and that he hit with the Blue Claws, and 5 of them were to the opposite field. So you're talking about a guy that has, you know, real opposite field power. Now, as a college corner outfielder, he's going to have to hit and hit a lot, but he's definitely capable. And then again, he'll move into Reading next year in a big hitter's ballpark. And he's off to a good start in the AFL already here in the fall of 23. Jake?
Yeah, I've kind of bounced around between a couple of names. If I had to be married to just one, it's probably Matt Kroon. Was with us, drew about, you know, early August, hit 319. Really good extra base power. And really was just consistent. He never really got into any cold spells all year. Like, you kind of go back through his game log, and it's like he was, you know, close to, if not over 300 for a lot of the season. So I think Kroon is probably the one. I have a couple, other names that I kind of met, went back and forth. So I think Johan Rojas very much deserves honorable mention. He was a 306 hitter when he got called up to the Phillies. He was hitting the ball for a lot more power, was driving it gap to gap, hitting a lot of extra base hits as well. And of course, you just factor in everything that Rojas does so well with his speed, ability, as I said, extra base hits, steal bases. And I think that makes him a viable candidate too. I would just give the edge to Kroon because he was here a little bit longer. And then the other one that I had in mind was Oliver Dunn hit. Ended up hitting 271 for us. And in terms of our guys that were here from April through September, he was the one who, we named him our team MVP in September. He was the one who kind of was that consistent force all year long. And he, after a slower first half, he kind of really heated up in the second half of the season. His first two and a half weeks of August were some of the best baseball I've ever seen. He was hitting home run. I think he hit 11 home runs in August, and they all came in the first 18 days of the month. He was hitting lots of power, hitting for contact, driving a gap to gap, extra base hits. So he definitely deserves a mention as well. But if I had to pick just one, it's probably Matt Kroon for just how consistent he was all year. Did not feel like he really ever hit any cold spells during the season.
Yeah, so I guess let's wrap it up. The easy answer just from day one for the Iron Pigs is Weston Wilson. I mean, guy ended up setting the franchise record for most homers in a year, surpassing Rhys Hoskins, and actually did it. He broke Rhys's record in shorter time than what Rhys needed to get to 29. So that was pretty cool that, it wasn't just a fluky thing from Weston that, he played here the entire year. No, it was true, legitimate power. And then you add on the fact that, he was the first Iron Pig ever to go 2020 and then the first ever go 30-30, set the franchise record for homers, runs scored, top 10 in walks, RBIs, almost every major statistic he's going to be in the Iron Pigs record book for. So over the course of the year, Weston, easily the Iron Pigs hitter of the year. But, I do want to give a huge shout out to Jake Cave. He posted an 1100 OPS over a 2-month stretch that was single-handedly the hottest I've ever seen a hitter be for an extended period of time. It was absolutely nuts. So that was a pretty crazy run. And then actually, Jake, like you said, Matt Kroon, the final month and a half when he was up with the Iron Pigs, and it really sucked that he ended up straining his hamstring that, caused him to miss a good chunk of time. But you could really see a lot of the tools that are kind of underneath the rough surface of what's been, robbed from us by injuries, that, he's got some special skills in there. And I'm interested to see how the Phillies kind of handle everything with him during the offseason, because I know they have some, tough decisions coming up with him. At the end of the day, Weston Wilson, just a combination of power and speed. He's kind of the true modern day hitter as far as, he strikes out a lot, but he walks a lot, puts the ball in the air, and is athletic enough to drive the ball and then steal bases when he gets on. Just really did it all.
So I guess for this round, we'll swing it back the other way. So we'll tee it back up for Sam for pitcher of the year.
Okay. And one thing I forgot to mention that I thought was funny with Threshersville, I don't know if any of you guys know this, they actually called Lehigh Valley Piggyville too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Awesome.
Yeah. I only know this because at the beginning of the year, they were teasing Dalton Guthrie that he was the mayor of Piggyville. And that title got bestowed on Scott Kingery by the end of the year. So
there you go. That's funny.
Up the organization. I did not know that. Love to see it.
Okay, so pitcher of the year. Things kind of had a weird season pitching-wise where there was just not that much in the way of consistency in every meaning of the word that, we were.
How many did you use? You must have used 40 pitchers probably, right? Yeah.
Like 40 or 45.
Yeah.
So it was certainly, a pretty good cycle of arms that we were running through. By the end of the year, Nick Nelson actually put together a really solid kind of unheralded season. He wasn't striking as many guys out, but he was working deep into games. I really loved what I saw from him as far as, I think he would have been more in a conversation of, man, if the Phils needed an arm, and obviously by the end of the year they did for the final game of the season, they threw him. But if the Phillies had been pressed into needing a starter at some point, it would have been Nick. it was just that, well, they never really needed somebody. And Christopher Sanchez was so dang good that, you know, there was no use in calling anybody up. And so if I had to go with one specific arm, it's probably Nick, just for what he did as a whole coming off of his injury. And then, you know, a special shout out to the bullpen churn guys that I like to call them, Luis Ortiz, Andrew Bellotti, Junior Marte, Jeff Hoffman, those guys going up and down at the beginning of the year, and then Hoff sticking for the entire season. That, you know, the Phillies did a really good job communicating what their role is supposed to be and did a phenomenal job in making sure that they were ready for that and fulfilled, you know, whatever was needed of them whenever, you know, the situation arose and they felt like truly a part of the team, even though, you know, you might be the 13th, 14th guy to the pen and you're stuck in Lehigh Valley. But when you go up, you're the number one priority again. So that was
really cool. Do a second on Hoffman because his story's underplayed.
Yeah. So Jeff actually, he was assigned to us on April Fool's Day, and he had been in spring training with the Twins, and he had an opt-out clause in his contract where if the Twins weren't going to put him on the major league roster or the 40 man, he could opt out. So we did. Signed with the Phillies. He had a similar opt-out at the end of April for, you know, whether or not the Phillies would add him to the 40 man in the major league roster. So when he was actually pitching for the Iron Pigs, his true numbers as far as, you know, performance in the field was actually terrible. he struggled a good deal. You could see under the surface it was fine, but he had about a 7 ERA. The whip was good at a 1-1. He just had some blow-up innings, but the overall stuff, I looked around a couple of times, started asking some dudes. I'm like, where did this come from? Dude's pumping 98, 99, wipeout slider, splitter's fantastic. So when he opted out of his contract, we were in Jacksonville, you know, people were asking, you know, do you think the Phillies should add him to the roster? I'm like, honestly, yeah. You don't find guys who are throwing 98, 99 with prior major league success that often. And thankfully, you know, the Phillies did add him. And he just kept on growing into his role. And a big thing about Jeff is he actually affected the Iron Pigs the rest of the year. And the for some reason, you know, everybody talks about the Phillies and pitching development as far as the cutter. The splitter became a huge thing with the Iron Pigs this season. And most of the guys credit Jeff for the impact that he had in teaching them the splitter, which I thought was really interesting.
And he was pitching for Harper, right?
Yes, yes.
Like, so, well, yeah.
Thank you for reminding me. If anybody has a 2023 Iron Pigs team photo, Hoff is not in it because that was the day of he was throwing a sim game to Harper. So he wasn't there.
That's funny. And then Harper,
said it was nasty.
Said this, bring this guy up. Yeah, this crazy story. And then in the eighth inning of a 2-run game in the first playoff game, they bring in Jeff Hoffman. So,
yeah,
awesome. Go ahead, Jake.
Well, the easy answers are Ryan Kirkery.
You take over Ryan Kirkery because he pitched more innings for Reading. He pitched 22 innings for Reading, 20 innings here, 10 innings for Clearwater, and one in Lehigh. So if you want Ryan Kirkery, we'll let you take him because he had the most innings in Reading.
All right. So I have him, and then I also have one of our starters, so I'll get to in a second. But Orion, I mean, it was just so fun to watch this year. And I mean, you can all attest to it. Like, it's also just a great kid, too, to get to know. It was fun. And it was unique in a sense because, like, we would get to the ninth inning and we'd be winning games. I usually end up down by the, like, field entrance to, like, get ready to, like, do a post-game interview. So I never really had a chance. We were at home to really enjoy like Orion Kirkering at all. And then the last week of the season was actually on the road at Binghamton and he came in a couple of times. That was really my first time I was able to kind of just like sit back and just enjoy just how good he is and just how good his stuff is. And I mean, like what everyone's talking about at the big league level, it's so true. Like his stuff is nasty. The slider is awesome. And when you have a fastball that you can dot up for 100 on the corners and pair with that slider, that's going to make you that much nastier. And it just felt like every day, every time he pitched, I would look back and go, okay, yeah, he hasn't allowed an earned run in 13 of his last 14 and like his last 7 or 8 outings. And it really all kind of capped off. It was the final Wednesday of the year at Binghamton and he had a 6-out save, which was the first one he's had in his pro career. So like that was cool too to see, okay, he's not just a one inning guy. If he needs to give you 2 frames, he can give you 2 frames. And I feel like we've seen 2 now, especially in the playoff appearances he's had. They've all been pretty efficient too, like 8, 9, 10 pitches. I think the one in game 1 was what? 8-pitch inning. I know he came back out for the 8th, but ended up walking Acuna and then getting pulled. But he's very efficient. And he's not the kind of guy who's like, I have to beat you with my fastball. I can throw that slider. I can set up the fastball. And if I get you to hit in the weak contact, I get you to hit in the weak contact. So he's definitely, I mean, the pitcher of the year. But I also think David Parkinson deserves a lot of credit and really a lot of, you know, he was our team pitcher of the year. Like, that's who we gave the award to and would probably be my overall pick. And he's got a cool story, too, because really was his first pretty good season since 2019. Former Paul Owens Award winner, too, Parkinson was. And, you know, his career started off really hot, won the Paul Owens Award, had a really good 2019. COVID hits in 20. Abysmal season in 21. I think he was a 1-11 with like a 7.6 ERA. You know, takes 22 off. Never really talked about why he took 22 off, but just to see him come back here in 23, just a refreshed mindset, refreshed focus. Like, me and him had a lot of just extended conversations about how his mindset's better, how he doesn't feel that pressure anymore that maybe he used to feel, and how it's just, you know, go out there, do my thing, and the rest will take care of itself. And the second half, he was awesome. The first half, you know, it was pretty good. He was had some good outings, but the second half, he was nearly unhittable. I think from July 7th through the end of the season, his ERA was sub 2, closer to 1.5. And he's not a huge strikeout guy. He's a lefty who's going to throw 90, mixing a really good curveball to set up that fastball. But just you look at the numbers the second half of the season, and it really was spectacular. And I know he went up to Lehigh Valley earlier in the year, earned himself a call-up late in the season, was really bummed that he didn't get a chance to make that last start, because I know that game was rained out too. So, you know, hopefully we'll kind of see. I know he's been in the system for a while. We'll see where he ends up this offseason. But whether it's here or elsewhere, he's a guy who I think deserves a chance in AAA to open up next season. And maybe could be a, you know, if he has a good stint in AAA, could be a depth piece in a, you know, in a big league rotation, you know, a 6 or 7 starter that if a guy gets injured, he gets caught up. Because I think he's, you know, he's put the work in and he's, I think, deserved those opportunities. So it's been cool to see Parkinson really bounce back after, I'm sure, for him has been a really tough handful of years.
Yeah, he was here in 18, I guess. He was awesome, great kid. And that's really cool that he bounced back really well. Matt Osterberg was a mid to late round pick a couple of years ago out of St. Cloud State. He's from a small town in Wisconsin with a population of 820 or something, 840. And he told me, he's like, yeah, but we're booming. It was 820 only a few years ago. So awesome kid, lefty, not overpowering, but he's just your prototypical crafty left-hander. He had a great year with the Blue Claws and got promoted to Reading, where he finished out the year. And I thought he deserved the shout out. He had a really solid year. And, you know, he's kind of like Parkinson. You know, he's not going to blow a fastball by you most likely, but he can throw 3 pitches for strikes in any time he wants. And he just knows how to pitch. And there's always a place in an organization for a guy like that. So happy to see him. And then, you know, Jordan Fowler was kind of him and Osterberg were 1 and 1A in the Blue Claws rotation, and Fowler unfortunately got hurt and missed the last couple of months of the season. But both of them had really good years. And then the other guy I wanted to give a shout out to was Mitch Newborn, 26 year old, but not a lot of wear on the tires. You know, he'd been in camp a couple of times with some teams, and he actually pitched for Travis Hergert, actually played offense and pitched for Travis Hergert when Travis was at Northern Iowa Area Community College. This is going back before COVID, but Mitch, you know, we never stuck around in an affiliated camp. Phillies finally signed him after the World Baseball Classic this year. And, you know, Chris Adamson, who had managed the Blue Claws in 2021 and has been in the Phillies system for a few years now and was the first base coach here in 2023, is also involved in Team Australia. And I know, you know, he was trying to get the Phillies to sign him. Well, they finally signed him after the WBC, and he had a great year. I mean, he had struck out 54 batters in 42 innings, and some of those runs that he had finished with a 3.38 ERA. Some of that was early on. By the end of the year, he was unhittable. He throws this Vulcan split changeup that he showed me once, and like, you have to have a big hand to do it. It's really difficult, but it's nasty. And He's getting a good test in the Arizona Fall League now. His first start was, or first relief appearance was very good. And again, you know, he's 26, but there's not a lot of wear and tear on that because he hasn't pitched extensively in affiliated baseball. Hasn't pitched at all in affiliated baseball before this season. He was actually this time last year, he was working a 9-to-5 job in Adelaide, getting ready to pitch for the Adelaide Giants in the Australian Winter League or the baseball league there summer, and then pitch for Team Australia in the WBC. So definitely got to keep an eye, and he'll be in Reading next year. And Jake, you're going to love that Vulcan change. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, just to comment, I remember seeing Mitch in the ABL when I was working for the Melbourne Aces last year, and he was a guy who really impressed me and by far Australia's best pitcher in the WBC. So good to see him in the United States in a big league organization. As for the pitcher of the year in Thresherville, if it were just a second half award, I'd have to give it to Danny Wilkinson. He had a tough start to the season, but in the second, there was one just really bad game where I felt terrible for the kid. We were in Dunedin, and it just started bucketing sheets of rain in the, I think it was the eighth inning. And I mean, no one could hold on to the baseball, especially not Wilkinson. So, you know, the Threshers were like a run or two behind, and they ended up losing that game by 4 because Wilkinson went in the eighth and walked every battery he faced because he couldn't hold on to the baseball. And this is a guy who throws a 90 mile an hour fastball with a wicked curve, nasty slider that just sweeps from one side of the plate to the other. So that was a real turning point for him, because after that, I think he let up one or two earned runs for the rest of the season. So he had a great second half of the year, but if we're talking overall pitchers, you know, obviously I'd like to give it to Kirkering because he's the most impressive pitching prospect that I've seen at the minor league level. And I think that is shown in his rapid rise up through all of our teams and all the way up to the Phillies. 10 shutout innings for the Threshers, 4 saves in 10 appearances, no blown saves. I mean, he was just unbelievable. But I'd probably have to go Wenhui Pan for the pitcher of the year for the Threshers, because there were two guys all season long that when they came out of the bullpen, I was like, all right, this game is over. The Threshers won. It was Kirkering and it was Wenhui Pan. Like Kirk, he's got really good breaking stuff. I think Kirk's slider is a bit more developed than some of Pond's 3 other breaking pitches, but that fastball was a bit slow at the beginning of the year just so we could get it better at location, but that hits 98, 99 on a consistent basis. Really good slider, a couple other solid breaking pitches that he mixed in there, but it's really that fastball slider combination that he uses incredibly effectively. He can put that fastball anywhere he wants. And he was a guy that other teams were legitimately afraid of coming to face him, and earned himself a really good, really well-earned promotion up to Jersey Shore late in the season. John Henriquez is another guy you'd have to consider. He left in July or I think it was July or August. He left Clearwater with 14 wins, and he finished the season 5 wins clear of anyone else in the Florida State League, or 2 or 3 wins clear. It was 5 wins when he left. By the end of the season, it was still 3 wins clear of everyone else. And this is coming in from a league that had some really good starters, particularly out of Palm Beach. But yeah, Henriquez had a really great year out of the bullpen. Starting wise, Jonathan Petit looked really good. They switched him from the bullpen early on and became one of the Threshers' most dependable starters. Gene Cabrera had a really nice finish to the season, particularly in the playoffs. He, I think, let up 1 earned run in the playoffs, if that. He was absolutely lights out. Estevenson Jimenez was another star that you can count on for some big games. And if we're doing like a starter of the year, I know obviously reliever of the year, I think Pond was the best overall pitcher and who played with the Threshers aside from Kirkering. But Sam Aldegary is another guy that I'd have to say would be my runner up. Another August call up to Jersey Shore. 93 mile an hour fastball. None of his stuff really blows you away, but his location really does. He can strike out guys with his off speed stuff and his fastball. Really exciting prospect who's had some injury trouble, and this was really like his first fully healthy year in his first full season in the minors, and he was absolutely outstanding. Young kid from Italy, not a lot of Italian pitchers that you see in the major or minor leagues, but guy with a really good command of the game, really wanted to win, and he was, I think, overall the Threshers' best starter of the year too. So while I think Pond would get my nod for pitcher of the year, I think Aldegary certainly deserves some love because he had a fantastic season for the Threshers too.
The Phillies had a few guys on Team Italy, Vito Frisia, Nick Fanny. I might be even missing someone. But if they get Aldegary on Team Italy, that would be the first one actually born in Italy instead of Long Island.
He'll be
like Vito.
Yeah.
Vito and Nick. Back to the podcast in a second. Since 1986, Rich Green Lawns has been the leading lawn fertilization company of the Jersey Shore, providing lawn fertilization, bed weed control, tick and mosquito control, as well as tree and shrub programs. Mention this ad and save 50% off your first lawn application. Call or text us today at 732-370-5963, 732-370-5963, or richgreenlawns.com. And when shopping for appliances, electronics, and mattresses, you want a local hometown team that you can trust. That's PC Richard & Son. PC Richard & Son is a friendly and knowledgeable sales team, installations and repair service you can trust, and the guaranteed lowest prices. So get to PC Richard & Son today. Shop smart. Shop local. Shop PC Richard & Son. All right. So breakout player in 23. Give me one guy, Josh.
I can't give you one guy. I mean, there's just too many, way too many. Otto Kemp, I know Greg, you and I had talked about him, before this all started. He's definitely a candidate. I might just have to give it to him cause he was undrafted, but I mean, so many different players. Amarion Boyd had a really nice season. Fantastic on the base paths, 56, 60 stolen bases. If you include the playoffs, he was great. William Bergoglio, only played half the year, but he was still a really good contact hitter, moved all around the lineup. Felix Reyes, I think, I'd probably say either Reyes or Otto. Both of those guys are very like unheralded. Reyes, I think, was only held down in single A so long because he was learning third base after playing mostly in the corner outfield, a little bit at first, but he transitioned to third and looks pretty solid at the third base bag, but he hits for a whole lot of power. And just whenever the Threshers needed a hit, and it seemed the same way up in Jersey Shore with you, Greg, he would be the guy to give in the run. 62 RBIs, tied him with Crawford for the team lead this season, hit about 270 with really good power. He looked really good. Otto Kemp was a guy that was not on a lot of people's radar, as is the case with a lot of undrafted free agents, some injury history that I didn't really know about at Point Loma that you told me, Greg. But he was another guy who was just a pillar of consistency. Defensively, offensively, was just spectacular for the Threshers. One of the leaders in on-base percentage at the time that he left, runs scored, walks. I mean, he was just a guy that, you know, Billy Bean would have really loved because he gets on base better than just about anyone. So he was really good with that. And then catchers also, Ryan Leach, Jordan Disson, both really surpassed expectations in a team that they kind of had to take that role early on with Caleb Ricketts, who played four games a series at the beginning of the season before he got called up. And then Disson and Leach both filled in really spectacularly. But I think if I had to narrow it down to just one overall player, I'd probably have to give the edge to either Felix Reyes or Otto Kemp. But I mean, with the Threshers this year, they had a 30-40 win improvement on last season. There's too many options when it comes to breakout player of the year.
Here with the Blue Claws, I thought Tristan Garnett had a really good year with Jersey Shore, and then he went to Reading and he was great up there too. Gave up one earned run in 13 innings there. You know, he's older, he's 25. Non-drafted free agent from Cal State Dominguez Hills, but you know, big tall guy, you know, throwing the low 90s, mixes in his off-speed pitches pretty well. I feel like he hides the ball really well, gets a lot of soft contact, and you know, he had a really good year for the Blue Claws. And you know, any lefty reliever that can get outs, you certainly got to give a chance to. And then just a couple other relievers that I thought had great years: Jack Dallas and Wesley Moore. Moore's story is fascinating. He was rehabbing an injury, and he thought he had applied for a waiver from the NCAA to pitch his last year at Kansas State, which would have been the spring of 2023. And in the fall of 2022, his waiver was denied. He must have been the only pitcher in America, or the only athlete in America, to have his waiver denied by the NCAA. So he has to scramble. The draft had already passed. The summer free agency period for non-drafted guys had already passed. So he put together a quick workout in Manhattan, Kansas, and the Phillies ended up signing him. And he was lights out with Clearwater, came up here and was great too. Struck out 40 guys in 28 innings. Throws from kind of a three-quarter arm slot with a slow curve, a fastball, and a changeup that'll dive away to right-handed hitters. And he's really tough. Jack Dallas is not a big guy, but he throws hard, and he's got a big sweeping breaking ball, that's a really good pitch too. And both of those guys, I think, had really fantastic seasons. And Garnett, you know, who began the year here and ended up with Jake in Redding.
Yeah, I mean, like both of you, I have a bunch of guys kind of that come to mind. I mean, like Rojas, because you look at him and the numbers, you know, were pretty good the last couple of years. He stole a lot of bases, but, you know, the batting average kind of wasn't where it was this year. It was more of, you know, 230, 240 hitter that if he got on base, you knew he could do a lot of damage, and you knew defensively just how good he was. But the question with him always was, can he get on base? Can he hit for average? And can he get the ball in the air more? And we saw all those things in Redding this year. He hit for power, hit for extra base hits, but the power didn't come with the sacrifice of getting on base. As I said, he still hit 306. And then even saw him in the Phillies or the rest of the regular season hit, I think it was 302 before the regular season came to an end. So he burst onto the scene, but of course he's someone who I think a lot of people expected to kind of take that next step this year at some point. And I think I circle back to a Matthew Kroon, who missed all of 2022, was an older guy who really burst on. But I guess if I had to go one, I'm probably going to go, I guess one more shout out, Carlos De La Cruz too. Hit 259, hit a career high 24 home runs too, which we know the power has always been there. It was nice to kind of see that get unlocked this year. I believe his previous career high was 17 home runs last year before hitting 24 this year. And he's a guy who I still think has 30 home run capability. He entered a lot of cold streaks this year where, you know, he would go a week and hit four home runs, and he would go 3 weeks and maybe hit one. So I think if he's a guy who, you know, can be more of a consistent power hitter, he's totally a guy that I think can, you know, knock on the door of 30 home runs, whether it be next year or at some point in his career. But I think Oliver Dunn, just when you look at the trajectory of his career, he's drafted by the Yankees out of Utah, and every stop he makes, he really never is an everyday player. He battled some injuries, 2022. Played mostly with Somerset, played a couple of games in Scranton and Wilkes-Barre, but I think he was limited to 38 games that year between just not being an everyday player, battling some injuries. So to come here and get a chance to be an everyday player and hit, you know, 21 home runs for a guy who, you know, really isn't that big. I mean, like, I look eye to eye with him, and I'm not very tall, so he's not a big guy at all. And to come and hit 21 home runs, drive in 78 runs, hit north of 270, just when you – you know, like I said, like, Kroon knew the potential was there. Rojas, you know how good he can be. But a guy like Oliver Dunn, there really was never any evidence throughout his career to say that he was going to take a jump like he did. So that was cool to see. And then, of course, he's going to the Arizona Fall League, and he's hitting, like, 450, and he's getting on base like a 570 clip. I mean, it's only been six games, but he's having a ton of success there already. So if I had to go just one for breakout player, I think when you look at the whole body of work through his career and what he did this year, Oliver Dunn's probably that guy.
Sam?
Yeah, I mean, Weston Wilson's making my life really easy that I'm gotta really dig too deep for this, but I mean, Weston took himself from somebody who, I mean, even when you look back through his entire minor league career in the Brewer system, he was a, you know, 18th round pick out of Clemson, always put up solid numbers in the minors, but was, you know, just kind of a standard performer where you just didn't know whether or not, you know, he'd ever perform at the kind of level in the minors that would really catch somebody's eye, despite his athletic gifts. And then he just finally put it all together this year from, you know, basically after a terrible April, hit 280 the rest of the way and went 30-30. And, you know, really just let it, he would always talk about just, you know, letting my athleticism do the work for me. He's a bigger guy, like 6'3", 210, 220-ish, but just an athletic freak, can run really well. He's got great power. He played all over the diamond for us, and I think really turned a lot of heads. And, you know, that's one thing the Phillies have been really good at, is finding those kind of, not even quite diamond in the rough, but able to find a good amount of depth, kind of out of nowhere where you least expect it, so that, you know, when they do have injuries, guys like Weston Wilson or Derek Hall or Cody Clemens can come up and, you know, fill the role quite admirably, and you don't really lose anything from it. So Weston, without a doubt, was the big breakout for, you know, our roster this season. And, you know, obviously there were quite a few guys who in a weird way went up to the majors and had their breakouts there. Even though they contributed to the Iron Pigs, you know, Chris Sanchez was solid with the Iron Pigs, but Sanchi also had a relief outing where he walked seven. So, you know, I was never quite sold on, man, is really the answer for the fifth starter? And then next thing you know, Caleb Cotham figures it out. But like him and Jeff Hoffman, just revelations in the pitching side, which was just so much fun to watch. They held their water here, kind of, you know, trying to fit some pieces together. And then to see guys like Weston and Sanchi and Hoff go up and do really well, it's great.
Winding it down here, give me a guy or two that played for you guys that you think could break out in 2024. Sam?
So I'm going to go Simone Muziotti. Muzi had a fantastic first 5 months of the season and then hit about .180 final 2 months, where it was basically where he hit the 100-game threshold. Because the prior 4 years, he played a combined 100 games. So just AC would talk about it, or hitting coach would talk about it. The number one priority for Simone was just play every day. Just get as many live action reps as he can, because he's missed out on so many. So I'm excited to see next year how he can make that step forward, where, you know, he has such great bat-to-ball skills, and I think he got a little beleaguered by the end of the year just physically. What a good offseason for him can do, you know, bulking up a little bit, where he can go into next year, play every day again, and really tap into the physical power that he has, because he's as gifted as it comes putting bat to ball. But it felt like the entire course of the year was trying to find that good balance for him between where, you know, sometimes he looks like a cricket player, you know, taking pitches that bounce and spray him everywhere, versus, you know, he had some great pull side power, but it just wouldn't come out on every single swing. So finding that will be key. And, you know, seeing how he can put that together will be really exciting. And then pitching wise, I think somebody who might have an effect on the bullpen, if he can add some velo, is actually Tyler McKay. I really like what I saw from him down the stretch. Some of the guys who would throw with him in the outfield said he's got some of the nastiest stuff that they've seen, just the arm side run, the sinker, great changeup, and a pretty good slider as well. So, you know, next year's roster for the Iron Pigs, you know, obviously Mick Abel will probably head up the rotation if he doesn't make it out of spring training. So that'll be exciting to watch. But Muzi is my click to pick.
Good stuff.
Pick to click.
So I guess I'll go hitter and pitcher real quick. Hitter, it's a guy that Greg, you mentioned, that had a lot of success a few before joining us, Marcus Lee Sang. He showed a lot of flashes, I think, over his about month and a half with us. He ended up hitting about 200, but he showcased, you know, really good speed, pretty good defense at and center, the ability to hit just, you know, line drives, gap to gap, but he also showed a lot of power and a lot of pop too. And I think he could be a really good piece at the top of our lineup next year, kind of filling that, you know, I'm not comparing him to Johan Rojas, but kind of filling that similar role where, you know, be strong defensive presence in center field, somebody who can hit for some power, you know, maybe a 15 home run a year guy, but also someone who, when he's on, could be a guy who hits in the upper 200s, also just playing every day at the double A level. Because he got here and he had a pretty strong start, kind of tapered off late, but I think he's a guy that he has the talent when he sees double A pitching every day. I think he can really break out next year. So on the hitting side, I'll go Lee Sang. On the pitching side, I don't even want to say breakout, because he had a great end of the year with us since joining us in August. And Greg probably knows exactly who I'm going to say already, but Matt Osterberg, who was really good with Jersey Shore and really good at us, won his first start and ended up winning Eastern League Pitcher of the Week the last week of the season, won 7 shutout innings at Binghamton. And he's just another one of those guys, similar to David Parkinson, you know, not a hard-throwing lefty, maybe will touch 90, 91, 92, mixing in the off-speed stuff well, isn't going to blow stuff by guys, it gets a lot of strikeouts. So, you know, we saw him have a lot of success the last month and a half of the year, and I think he's a guy that, when thinking who's going to be in our rotation next year, it wouldn't shock me if he, you know, heads the rotation or even gets the opening day nod, because I think he's someone who I think can take another jump next year.
I'll give you guys two pitchers. One is Andrew Walling, who came up in July from Clearwater, and he had a couple of blow up outings. So, you know, it looks 8 runs, 6 earned, and 16 and 2/3, but 27 strikeouts, 3 walks. Lefties can't hit him. They were something like 4 for 60 with 30 strikeouts between here and Clearwater. He throws very hard and he has a wipe out nasty slider. He'll throw in the mid to upper 90s with a wipeout slider. And there's always a good spot for lefties that can do that, of course. You know, he is a guy that was under the radar. He wasn't drafted. He would have been drafted in the old system, but he had an injury history from Mississippi State. He ended up playing in the draft league for Williamsport. So we would joke that he's the latest player to go from Williamsport to the Blue Claws, obviously, as had happened from 2010 or so through 2019 until the restructuring. And I asked him about the draft league, and he loved it. And he said, would you be here without it? He said, absolutely not. And, you know, a great opportunity for a guy like him who just needed reps and needed to show people that he was healthy, and he did. And I think the Philly signed a real gem there. So hopefully he can stay healthy, and he'll be in Reading, of course, next year. And then the other one is, this one might be cheating a little bit, but Christian McGowan, who was he was on some of the prospect list. He was coming back from Tommy John. He got hurt on Easter Sunday of 2022 while with the Blue Claws, and came back, was very good. He gave up actually 4 runs in 1 inning in his first start back. And then after that, and gave up 2 or 3 runs, maybe even, I think, 2 runs in his last 5 starts, including a playoff start with Jersey Shore. He gets it into the mid to upper 90s, good slider. And he's pitching right now in the Arizona Fall League just so they can get his innings up. And I'm sure he'll start next year in Reading. But I also expect that he'll finish next year in Lehigh Valley. And he's definitely a name to keep an eye on. And ironically, him and Walling, McGowan and Walling, were teammates at Eastern Oklahoma State Junior College for 1 year in 2021. McGowan got drafted and Walling ended up going to Mississippi State, but both of those guys definitely two to watch. Josh?
I mean, another really difficult question. There were so many. I mean, the Threshers are just filled with young, talented players at every single position. Hitters, I think Ricardo Rosario is a guy that you could watch out for. William Bergoglio as well. And obviously
Rosario had those walk. He had like 2 walk-off home runs. Is that right?
Yeah. One on he also had, I mean, his July 4th game is still my favorite memory of like my entire baseball career, because he made this like ridiculous, like jumping into the wall. He flew, like, I'm pretty sure he sprouted wings and flew to make this catch, because it was just unbelievable. Like my description is not going to be able to do it justice. In the bottom of the 8th inning, 2 runners on, we're up by 1. He leads off the top of the 8th inning with just an absolute missile to left field. And, you know, we had 8,800 plus in the house that night for July 4th, and the whole stadium just erupted. So, I mean, he's responsible for some of my favorite moments for the Threshers. He was great in the playoff for us. He's a good guy to say, but my I think, definitive pick for breakout next year is going to be Jordan Vyers. Still kind of working things out. He was a third rounder out of high school and just turned 20 in July. But he was a guy I expected a lot from the beginning of the season, because I saw him during minor league camp, and he just has tremendous power from the left-hand side of the plate too. Struggled a little bit, but the last couple weeks of the season, he really started to get it together, had a couple of good playoff games, and he showed the signs of being a really good hitter. You know, he was one of, I think, 4 or 5 Threshers with a 4-hit game in the season this year. Couple of big home runs, but like, his contact is getting better. He has gap to gap power, definitely better at pulling the ball, but I think he's really going to make a big step next year, because he really started to get at the end of the year. But obviously Aiden Miller is going to be a guy to watch out for. That kid, I think, made 1 error in his first game at shortstop, like literally his Threshers debut. After that, he was one of the cleanest fielding shortstop I've seen all year. And then we would not have won the first round without him. He had almost 500 during the playoffs. He was fantastic. Fantastic playoffs for us. I'm definitely excited to see him continue to grow. William Bergoglio, another name, when he gets an actual full season under his belt, I think he's going to do really well. And then pitching wise, I'm going to go with Josh Bortka. He was a guy who was not great at the beginning of the season, working on his command. By the end of the season, partly because Greg took all of our great relievers, you know, Wesley Moore, Jack Dallas, Andrew Walling were fantastic late end of the bullpen, John Henriquez, Pond as well. I mean,
I just wanted
so many great relievers.
They always listen to me when I make roster requests, by the way.
There you go. Well, I'll make sure to mute your calls whenever we're talking about that next year. But in all seriousness, Bortko was a guy who started the season with us, spent less than a month with us at the beginning of the season before going down to the complex, and he came out of the FCL, a new pitcher. He turned into our closer at the end of the season, was great. And I really think next year might really things are going to start to turn the right way for him. Starting wise, couple of possibilities here as well. Estevenson Jimenez, I think, is a guy who's due not necessarily for a bounce back season. He finished the year like 3-8 with a 3.80 ERA, which I don't think was indicative of how good he was. He was a very dependable starter for the Threshers this season. Jonathan Petit as well. But Alex McFarland, a guy who had a really tough end to the season because of injuries. And until he got put on the Devilish in June, when he was on, he had some of the best stuff. Like he had Ryan Kirkering level stuff. 98 mile an hour fastball. He touched 100 in the first game of the season. He just needs to get his location just a bit more pinpointed. So I think once he can do that, he can really make a turn, because I think McFarland is going to be a fantastic starter, hopefully for the Phillies, as he keeps rising up the ranks in his first full season.
What happened to Jaden Estenista? And apologies if I'm mispronouncing.
Yeah. Another guy who, no, I think you got it right. Well done. He got hurt towards the end of the year. He another guy with really good stuff. He's got a disgusting cutter.
Yeah, I remember watching the WBC. Yeah. I'm like, oh, he's going to be in Clearwater. This guy might be up here soon.
The Threshers pitching coach called his cutter like a 93 mile an hour slider, something like that. I mean, it just so much side to side action on it. He struggled with injuries all year. Like, you can tell the stuff is good, but I think injuries made it a bit tougher for him to command this year. Hopefully he can get a fully healthy season under his belt, because he's a good kid and I'd like to see him do well. Daniel Harper's another guy coming out of the bullpen that was lights out in the playoffs. He was a late inning guy during the regular season. And, you know, just because wear and tear on everyone's arms towards the end of the season, Threshers were a bit injury depleted towards the playoffs, and Harper stepped up to like first guy of the bullpen for the couple of playoff games that he pitched, and he was great. 95 mile an hour fastball paired with a great cutter that I think can do damage as he progresses in his minor league career.
We covered so much ground. I appreciate you guys. If there's anybody else that we haven't mentioned that you want to at least give a little shout out to, now's the time. Sam, go ahead.
It's not so much one player as it is the entire system as a whole. One thing that I consistently heard from every single rehabber who came back to us was how much they enjoyed playing at every single level of this minor league system. In particular, Greg, actually, Aramis Garcia, Michael Plassmeyer, in the second half of the year with Jersey Shore, both said that it was like legitimately rejuvenating for them playing with your guys in Jersey Shore, that like, they're like, man, it was like so wholesome. But yeah, literally, I've tried to get people to understand that the way the Phillies are at the major league level is somehow how it's been throughout the entirety of the minors. And I think that's a really special thing that's very rare, that everybody has bought into that, that it's one big old happy family. So to actually see it play out like that has been great. So, you know, that's kind of my shout out on the whole, that, you know, every single guy from our clubhouse in Lehigh Valley, be it the minor league free agent guys, undrafted guys, everybody felt at home. And, you know, a guy I know everybody has interacted with here, Vito Frisia. Vito would, you know, as a guy who was drafted 40th rounds, is, you know, most of the time the bullpen catcher for us. He said he never once felt slighted by anybody on this roster, be it the guys who had 10 years of major league service time or any of the high prospects coming up through the system. I think that speaks a lot to how just this whole minor league system is so cohesive. I think that's awesome.
Jake?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of just like what Sam said, like the organization as a whole, I just think from top to bottom, it shows, and it's cool to see. I mean, I am someone who I know Sam, I think, is in a similar boat. I don't know Greg or Josh, but I grew up a big Phillies fan. So it's like getting a chance to like, hey, be in the organization is great. But to know that the organization that I grew up cheering for is filled from like top to bottom with so many good people. And you know, like we had Dave Dombrowski here for a couple of games, and just you talk to him for 5 minutes and you kind of understand why the culture of this organization is the way it is just from him. I know our manager, Al Pedrique, told us a few times how Rob Thompson just treated him and everybody from the top down with a ton of respect. And we were actually as a front office there the night the Phillies clinched, and actually got the – we were actually able to hear from Rob Thompson, where he was able to kind of able to thank the entire front office, everybody, for kind of everything they do. So,
oh, I saw that video. Somebody put it out. They came up to like the club area or whatever.
Yeah. It was like
the, it was the night they did like the, it was the night they did the Owens Award or the Community Service Award or maybe both of them. I saw that video. That was fantastic. It was not every manager's going up to do that.
Yeah. It was the Owens Award, Community Service Award, and then they also clinched that same night. So he came up and spent a couple of minutes thanking everybody. So you see that up top. And of course, the player development staff, I mean, Edwin, Jake, and Landon all did a terrific job. I mean, all four of us know that we were inundated with roster moves all year long. So I think we got to know the three of them quite well this summer. And they were all just incredible and awesome to work with, getting a chance to meet. I know Edwin and Jake actually were out at our ballpark for a couple of days in August. They were awesome. I mean, Preston Mattingly, I know the whole mantra is protect the standard. That's the big thing. And it's cool because you see it from throughout the entire organization. And I mean, our coaching staff was great. All of our players were awesome. I've told people time and time again, I don't think I had one negative interaction with any of our players or coaches all year long. And that goes to show, you know, not just the character of our guys, but just the entire organization as well. So it's just an organization from top to bottom that's built the right way, that knows how to, you know, treat people the right way, whether it's players, coaches, or people that are more in, you know, front office roles like we are. So that's super cool to see as well. And it's cool now, like, you kind of watch the playoffs. And like I alluded to at the beginning, like growing up a Phillies fan, it's all like last year, like, was incredibly special to watch. But now, like, being in the organization, A, feels like you know a couple of the guys that are on the team, but also feeling like, I don't want to say feeling like you're a part of it, but feeling like you know people quite well that are a really big part of it. Like, it feels like it means that much more. And I'll give one individual shout out real quick. Greg, it's a guy that you had for a while this year as well, Nick Ward. Somebody who grew up literally 45 minutes from the ballpark in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, played at Westchester University. So he was someone, which is cool to have him around, because it's someone who genuinely, like, is a diehard Phillies fan. Like, when the season ended, our season ended, it was like, all right, go Phillies. Or he was a big, like, go Birds, go Eagles fan. So it was cool to, you know, kind of connect with him and get to know him on that. And his story is just, it's just a super cool story. Somebody who's 28 years old, had a cup of coffee in the athletic system, played indie ball, played in the Australian League. That's where he ended up signing with the Phillies, played in the World Baseball Classic. And kind of last thing I'll say about him is just, he's the kind of guy that plays the game the right way. And someone who understands, like, you know, I'm 28 years old, I need to do everything right if I'm going to make it. And he's someone who comes in every single day, does things the right way, is a leader in the clubhouse. So, you know, outside of the entire organization, one individual player shout out definitely has to go to Nick Ward.
Yeah, totally agree. He's awesome. And he's the type of guy that every manager wants to have, you know, 15 of in his clubhouse. And every organization should have a couple of Nick Wards scattered up and down, because, you know, nobody set a better example for the younger players in the system and in the clubhouse every day than he did. He was great. And yeah, just to echo what you guys have said about the organization, it's really top notch. Everybody from, you know, the coordinators to, you know, Preston Mattingly to Dave Dombrowski and everybody in between, and, you know, what they've done in developing these guys over the last few years is really remarkable. I mean, you look at this roster, you know, Sir Anthony Dominguez was a, you know, relatively low budget international signee. Ranger Suarez was almost a no budget international signee. Johan Rojas signed for, I think, 10,000, maybe 20,000, which, again, basically nothing. You know, Sixto Sanchez signed for $10,000 and they turned him into JT Realmuto. So yes, they have financial power and they've used that wisely and successfully, but they've made a lot of these, you know, Orion Kerkering is a perfect example. Fifth round pick, he's in the big leagues 16 months after, you know, after he gets drafted. They signed Edgar Garcia for a little bit of money, and he ended up helping them get Jose Alvarado, obviously a key piece in, you know, in their bullpen. They hit on first round picks, Stott and Bohm. Those are home run draft picks. Can't do any better than that. So, you know, they've developed both from the top of the player procurement pool, you know, first round picks and free agency, but also from the bottom. And you get a guy like Ranger Suarez. I mean, think about it. You know, the Ranger Suarez is their third starter. He signed for almost no money as a very cheap international signee. And, you know, they don't need to go out and spend $25 million on a three starter because they have him who's making very little money, and it frees them up to sign Trey Turner. So like those are the kind of little things on the margins that are super important. So yeah, no, top class organization, and certainly rooting for him. And I have a soft spot for Dusty Wathen, who was the manager of the Blue Claws my first year here, and as good a guy as you're ever going to meet in baseball. So I'll always root for Dusty no matter where he ends up. And hopefully he gets a big league managerial job someday, but not till after he gets a World Series ring with the Phillies. Josh, last word.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, just to echo the sentiments that you guys have been saying about just how great an organization that the Phillies have. I mean, this is my first year with the Phillies, with the Threshers, in the Phillies organization, you know, bounced around. This is my first year I've been able to call myself the voice of a team, and it's just been a really special experience, not just because of how good the Threshers were this year, but because of how well I feel I was treated. I mean, I've never really felt like, as a broadcaster whose highest level of baseball was Little League, like I never really thought that I would feel as much of a part of the team as anyone who is going out there on the diamond 6 days a week. But I really did feel welcomed into the organization, into the team, into the clubhouse, whatever. And I think that is just a way to show, I mean, how good of an organization the Phillies have, no matter everywhere. No matter which team you're with, it just seems like they hire really top quality people. And I think that is one of the reasons that they are one of the most successful major league franchises in baseball right now, and why I'm hoping that they get a World Series ring, and hopefully that they continue this great playoff run that they're having. In terms of the actual Threshers, I mean, you know, I could shout out the entire organization, but we don't have time for all that. The coaching staff was fantastic. All the field support staff were great. I really enjoyed my first year with the Threshers. Excited to see all the guys back in minor league camp and some in major league camp this coming spring, and getting ready to do all over again.
Guys, I couldn't thank you enough for this. I kept you longer than I said I would. Sam Jelinek from Lehigh Valley, Jake Starr from Reading, Josh Sperber from Clearwater. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. And go Phils.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
Go Phils.
Lightstar Energy Group is a leading energy brokerage firm headquartered in New Jersey. Our goal is to provide clients with premium energy management services to lower electricity and natural gas costs and to provide a long-term energy management strategy. We pride ourselves on bringing each and every individual business the same benefits of deregulation enjoyed by universities, municipalities, and all high-volume energy users. Tailored products and contracts, lower cost, personal attention, and outstanding service. 732-722-5880. 732-722-5880. To learn more about Lightstar Energy Group today. So I hope you enjoyed the roundtable discussion wrapping up the Phillies minor league system. And we didn't spend the whole thing on Orion Kerkring, though, of course, who Orion is the only player to play for the Blue Claws and the Phillies in the same year, not including rehab assignments. And obviously a lot of that time that Blue Claws had, they were an affiliate, a low A affiliate. So you were never really going to see a player go from low A to the big leagues in the same year. That said, Kerkering literally did it this year. So first player to play for the Blue Claws, who are now high A, obviously, and the Phillies in the same year. And the first player to play at low A, high A, double A, triple A, and in the big leagues in the same year since Jose Contreras did it with the Yankees about 15, 20 years ago. Matt Gelb of The Athletic had that one a couple of weeks back. So what he did this year, really, really historic. So congrats to Orion on a great year. And then the other Paul Owens Award winner, Kerkering was the pitcher of the year. The other Paul Owens Award winner, the hitter of the year, was Johan Rojas, who, of course, played for the Blue Claws back in 2021 and the early part of 2022. And they're both on the Phillies playoff roster. Rojas plays every day in center field for Philadelphia. So thanks to Jake Starr from the Reading Fighting Phil, Sam Jelinek from the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, Josh Sperber from the Clearwater Threshers. I'm Greg Giamborisi, and thank you for tuning in. Like, rate, review, subscribe, Phillies Minor League Year in Review as part of Hook, Line, and Splitter. It's a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Have a great day, everybody. Go Phil.